I'm Lindsay.
I'm Austin.
And I'm Joe from PopX Cast,
a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in
3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I'm the chief editor, SP, and your other reporters for this special episode 163 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
And now I know how Matt Damon felt.
The Martian. I need a moment. And Michelle.
Menial labor without super speed is quite tedious.
Hello? Oh, gosh, these superheroes take their superpowers for granted. Go figure. Hey, everybody, this podcast is recorded Sunday, August 6th, 2016, live on Geeks.live. Remember, our newspaper is full of spoilers, facts, and speculations about Arrow, and while we're at it, the rest of the DC TV movie and comic universe.
Today, we will be discussing Legends Tomorrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could impact future episodes of shows such as Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Vixen, Constantine, and I won't list all the stuff that's not currently airing, maybe even Black Lightning.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at GunnaGeek.com. We can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under the Gunna Geek Productions banner.
Dari, we got the admin out of the way. We've told everything about our show, but now, Michelle, it's time to go ahead and break down the current episode.
Sure thing. This episode is called Moonshot. It's season 2, episode 14. It originally aired Tuesday, March 14, 2017. Director, Kevin Mock. Directing credits also include this episode of Legends, 1 Chuck, and 14 America's Next Top Model.
Woo, which is important in space.
Hey, you know, Tyra Banks can be out there sometimes, so maybe that's how it translated.
Sometimes?
Chris took the words out of my mouth.
This episode was written by Grant Godfrey, also has done 7 Legends, 6 Flash, 1 Arrow, and 4 Tomorrow People.
We run down the ratings each episode that we cover, and this week, back in March 2017, Supergirl didn't air. Flash, on the other hand, did air Tuesday, right before this episode, the 14th of March, and with their episode Into the Speed Force, obtained a rating of 2.39, with a Live Plus DVR of 4.10. Over on Wednesday, the day after this episode aired, Arrow aired with the episode Checkmate to a live rating of 1.53 and a Live Plus DVR rating of 2.39. Now, this episode of Legends of Tomorrow, titled Moonshot, on the 14th of March, 2017, just an hour later than Flash, got a live rating of 1.34 with a Live Plus DVR rating of 2.35. I have a postulation. I think I have a reason why this phenomenal episode got the series low rating for the second season of Legends of Tomorrow. Michelle, do you want to hear what my theory is?
Yes, I do.
The theory is Tuesday, March 14th, 2017 was the start of the NCAA basketball tournament play-in games. Yes, March Madness started this night. I think it affected Flash a little bit, but as the games wore on and the night wore on, I think Legends of Tomorrow took the brunt of it. Remember, the demographic for this is also kind of overlapping the demographic for those NCAA basketball games. So I think we have a correlation here. I don't know, Chris, what do you think?
It's possible. The thing, though, that we need to look at is the DVR numbers. And the DVR numbers did give it a jump because most of those kids in the younger demographic that's going to watch the basketball game or might be invested because their school's in there are probably going to DVR any of the stuff they're going to miss afterwards. And it was still lower than Arrow after the DVR ratings got factored in.
Do we have a determination on whether the DVR includes the plays on the CW app?
As far as I know, it does not.
All right.
No. Those numbers.
Yeah. I think that demographic, actually, those kids don't have DVRs. So, you know, college-age kids, they just don't. They stream as much as they can now. So, that's what I'm thinking. Michelle, are you with me here?
Yes, because when my mom didn't have cable, she used the app on the Roku to watch all the CW shows. So obviously her numbers wasn't included in the DVR. And I'm sure she's not the only one doing that.
Mm-hmm. But what I'm trying to say is this week was inaccurately represented to the viewership and the ratings. But we'll see what happens next year because there is a season 3 of Legends of Tomorrow and they may or may not have an episode on the start of the week for March Madness. So now we're going to move on into the overall theme of this episode. We usually look at for the overall theme towards the title, Moonshot, and we usually give this one over to Michelle. So Michelle, what do you got for an overall theme?
Well, let's see. They're looking for the Spear of Destiny. Commander Steel has it. Commander Steel is a part of NASA. He hid his part on the moon, so they gotta go to the moon. That's basically it. That's what I got.
That would take quite a bit to hide anything on a lunar shot. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but yeah, okay. Moonshot.
He hid it in the flag.
Yeah, there's a way. There's so many things. Like I said, we'll talk about that in a second.
I have an excuse for you when we get to that point, too.
Okay. So, Chris, while we're talking about excuses, let's talk about fight scenes.
Yeah, there basically were none. We got one little piddly fight, which does not really match up very well with a lot of the other fights we've had in this show, where Rey fights the non-super-speeded Eobard Thawn inside the lunar lander. There's no gravity. There's some punches. Rey gets his suit cut up a little bit. Thawn gets punched a bit. And it causes the lunar module to start to descend. Problems.
Always the big red button that could easily be pushed with an errant foot.
It's not like we would cover those buttons so that they couldn't accidentally be pushed if they were important.
Got a question for you, Chris, as the comic book expert of this show. Actually, just better than me, I guess. No gravity, no speed force? I don't know if I'm kosher with that.
Well, they never did that in things like the Justice League cartoon or the comic books or anything like that. I've never heard the excuse of there's no gravity, so there's no super speed.
I could understand why he couldn't push off on anything with no gravity, but you can still vibrate, so you still have the speed force. And on the lunar surface, you have 1/6 of Earth's gravity, so it's not no gravity. You have some gravity, so you would have 1/6 of the speed force if you even wanted to apply that rule.
I think they were just trying to find a unique way to depower Eobard so that he doesn't just dominate Rey inside there. I don't know.
Or he could have lied because he is being chased by the Black Flash thing. So maybe because Rey doesn't know any better. He doesn't have a PhD in the Speed Force. So maybe Eobard was like, I've got to give a reason. Let me just say there's no gravity because this guy's a dunderhead and he'll just believe me.
That's a good reason. And remember, we did see that when the Black Racer or whatever we end up calling that Flash, I can't recall, was in the same room as Eobard. If Eobard wasn't using his speed, it couldn't see him. And his little timer or his little wristwatch didn't start going off later in the episode until he used his powers to vibrate out of the cell. So I think there's a lot of merit to that theory that he wasn't using his powers, not because he couldn't, but because he would attract the Black Racer and he needed to get to the moon.
I think that's important to denote to all the millions of kids that are watching this episode and then listening to us months later talk about it as they prepare for the fall school era. Having no gravity, you would still have speed force. And yes, Rey is a dunderhead. Very good explanation, Michelle. Very good explanation. All right, Michelle, you are the time travel expert on this show. So where do we got? Where are we going? Where have we been in this episode?
Well, we get a few minutes in 1965 Manhattan. We see Rip drop off Steele, saying that, you know, you've got to hide your piece of the spear and you got to disappear. And then literally a couple of minutes later, they're there in the steps and they're gone and Steele's gone. And Rip's like, wait, he should still be here. And Vixen's like, well, you told him to disappear. And then we go to 1970 Houston, specifically April 13th. This is the Apollo 13th mission where, you know, they find his picture and they realize that's where Steele is. He's part of NASA and part of Mission Control. And then there's the whole Apollo 13 incident where apparently it doesn't go the way that is portrayed in the Ron Howard movie. And they realize something's wrong and stuff happens. And you know what? I'm just going to turn this over to you, SP. This is rockets and space. So please.
Okay. So a few things here. So they're traveling and there's no explosion because obviously the Legion of Doom has fixed the O2 tank. They've been at this for a while. They've known that the spear is in on the moon and this is the way to go get it, which it's a very long game for time travelers to play. But OK, I digress. They could have gone back to the moon at any time. They didn't have to wait for 1970. They could have gone into the living in the future, right? So they could have gone anytime, but they chose this time to go get the spear. Okay. So they're going for the spear. They're inside the Apollo 13 command module and LEM. They're headed there. It's been fixed. No big deal. No explosion. Then all of a sudden, they go into the dark side of the moon where there's no direct communication. Back then, that was true. There was no direct communication. I think now we could bounce a signal off of some relay satellites and be able to have communication on the dark side of the moon. It would be tricky because any satellite that they'd be using for that was not, we don't have a communication satellite that's specifically designed for that. So we'd be bouncing it off maybe a telescope or something like that. That's not designed to have voice telescopes. So, okay, there is no talk. But then they come back and there is no communication. I think the flight commander would have called security, the flight chief on the deck there at NASA would have called security and had Stein removed immediately, especially after comms would talk to the flight commander and say, I have nothing here. So, yeah, there's that. But because plot, and Stein gets a great singing role there, too. And Mick gets to play. Nice voice, professor. Okay.
I like it when Mick gets to play.
That's all he did this episode, is he got to play and eat a donut. So, yeah.
Well, donuts are delicious.
I think he looks good in glasses. Michelle, what do you think?
I like those glasses. They fit. It was funny.
So, the next thing that comes up is that because the LEM is ejected from the command module and forced to land, which I'm not sure if the LEM was designed to never be able to reattach to the command module. I think that could have been done, actually, and they didn't have to land, but apparently that's what they were doing. So, okay. All that fighting that was going on within the module would have caused a rotation at the very least to knock the spacecraft out of stability, but not out of their flight plan. When the LEM was ejected, that would have knocked the command module out. I doubt it would have busted it out of its orbit. And it was apparently, because it was probably in a free return trajectory, which means that it would go around the moon. And if they didn't do a burn on the other side of the moon, that they would have returned to the Earth in a free return. That's just how gravity works, kids. And the mission was specifically designed to do that. So now the command module is headed out towards meteorites, which when I first saw this, I was like, there's no way the asteroid belt is that close to the moon. But that's not what they insinuated. They insinuated that there was a meteor shower, basically, that was nearby. Okay. It's pretty big meteors. But the ground radar would have picked up where they were. There wouldn't have been a, I don't know where they are. It would have been, they are not where they're supposed to be, and we're going to find them with radar tracking. Because that's what they did back then. They tracked those flights pretty staunchly. So, yeah, some things I can get. Some things are like, eh. But in the end, this is not how this would work. And then when they do land on the lunar surface, they're walking around the limb like no big deal. That's not the case either. You have 1/6 gravity. You had to, even in the limb, modify how you'd walk.
That was a cost savings measure for them in production, so they didn't have to try and do low gravity, zero gravity environment on the moon.
Yeah, true. Okay, so the Spear being on Apollo 11, which we don't see the Apollo 11 remnants of the lunar module, by the way, which we would have, but that was just a cost-saving measure for the show for graphics, I'm assuming. Everything was weighed before it went on the spacecraft. Everything was weighed before it was packed. They would have noticed even the slight difference in the weight from the flagpole with the Spear in it. So that's where I'm scratching my head. I don't understand why that happened, but that's me being way too realistic.
Because Commander Steele forged the logs.
Yeah, Commander Steele.
Maybe he put it in there and then it was weighed.
No, because everything is weighed against what it should have been. It wasn't just weighed and packed.
I look at it this way. He was a bigwig at Mission Control and things like that. So he probably had the pull, albeit unknown other folks, to go and screw with the results enough or obscure the fact that this flagpole weighs more than it should. That was how I read into it, at least.
Well, he was a bigwig enough to be able to slug a reporter and get away with it. That was pretty cool.
In the middle of all of the other reporters sitting in there, yeah.
Different time.
I don't know. We might see that happen again in current days, but that's neither here nor there.
So, yeah, if anybody has a question specifically on Apollo 13, you can reach out to me and we could talk about it on the show next time.
So let me say this episode is science fiction.
There you go. You've been waiting a long time to say that, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely science fiction. All right, so that is the time travel. That is the fights. Now we're going to go down the crew, and we're going to have to start with Captain Lance. And Captain Lance had a very special episode this week in relation to the former captain of the Wave Runner.
This is the episode where Rip saw that, wow, she's really become a captain. She's coming to her own. She's there leading that brainstorming session, trying to find, you know, Nate's grandfather, and they boom, 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 already have a plan. And then Rip's coming in with a book, and I think I know. And she's like, yeah, we figured it out. Let's do this. And she has a plan, you know, let's infiltrate NASA, you know, then something happens. We're going to send Ray to Apollo 13. This happens, and I'm going to use the ship like Rip did and shield from, you know, the meteors. Something happens. I got a plan for it.
And makes a decision and stands by it. So, Chris, what did you think about Sarah's performance?
Well, like you guys were saying, she kind of proved to Rip that this is her ship now. And there's that moment at the end where they kind of reflect on that. And she goes, so what you in here sulking about? And it's the fact that she did a better job of putting together that crew of making them not be dysfunctional than he did. Now, that being said, part of Rip's problem has always been that he's running at 1,000 miles an hour and was screwed up in the head and having his mind scrambled probably didn't help, but Sarah's killing it as captain and he realizes it now.
So I'm going to throw a curveball at you guys. We've been rating Sarah Lance as Captain Lance of the Wave Rider for the last few episodes. I'm going to ask you to rate both the ex-captain Rip Hunter in this episode and Sarah Lance, Captain Sarah Lance for this episode. So Michelle, why don't you start rating the two captains?
Well, Rip was always like a step behind, and he was kind of questioning Sarah, not really like getting on board. I really don't know if he could have done what she did. A 3 for him. And for Sarah, look, they gave her a plot, as SP basically explained how just ludicrous, you know, it was. So considering how loosey-goosey they played with the science, I would I would definitely, 9.5, almost a 10.
Mm. Chris, those are high marks. What do you think?
I don't know if it's just really fair or plausible to rate Captain Hunter as the captain, because he didn't really try to be captain. Yes, he tried to have some plans and some ideas, but he'd already taken a step back last week. And this was, I guess, the final half step back to realize, okay, no longer my ship, no longer my crew. But I don't think it's really fair to judge him through the captain's lens personally.
Okay, well, I'm going to anyway, but go ahead, rate Captain Lance.
Captain Lance? 8, 9. Somewhere in there.
8.5 we'll have to go with. So 8.5 and then 9.5. So Captain Rip Hunter, he was bashful. He was not direct in his communications at all. He was non-communicative on what he was doing or what he thought needed to be done. And he had this assumption that, even though they've talked about it before, that he might be in some position of power. He didn't even take the step down and say he was like first officer and do the first officer stuff with the captain by presenting the captain with alternative solutions, controlling the crew, none of that. He was miserable. The 3 would be generous for this episode, but I'll go two. Now, Captain Lance was awesome. She had some command issues on her ship where she didn't know if she should be the one in charge or not, but she did end up making the decisions. Her command was reaffirmed, and she made the smart moves every single time, including trying to control the wave runner when it didn't have any controls on there as well. Did you see her moving that stick? Yeah, didn't mean a thing for her. I will give her a 9 on this episode. So that's squarely a 9 for her and a 2.5 minus Chris's non-vote for Captain Rip Hunter.
Well, he's not the captain. You can't judge him as a captain. I stand by that decision.
I can see your point, Chris. I can.
Even a former captain always will be evaluated as a captain. Look at Star Trek, the motion picture.
You've actually watched that, not fallen asleep?
Yeah.
It's so boring.
And Captain Spock, Captain Sulu. I mean, yeah, all captains. But that's neither here nor there. I think we're in agreement that he got low marks and she got really high marks. So let's move on to the rest of the crew. Michelle, where do you want to go next?
Again, seeing Ray geek out is still cute and endearing. That's Brandon Routh's really superpower when it comes to acting, that he can make Ray charming and endearing when he is jumping around the moon and pretending to be Matt Damon.
Matt Damon. Sorry, I was watching Team America the other day.
So I did like the little video short that he did, like the Martian did, and unfortunately it was all ruined and everything. I would have preferred that to have perpetrated for the rest of the episode, but they would probably cut it for time. I don't know. Yeah, Ray at the end is asked if he trusts Eobard Thawne, and Ray says yes. And I think that's too simplified. I think he should have said yes in this. I don't trust him overall, but I trust him in this, and he didn't. So that's somewhat of a character flaw, maybe poor writing.
I think that was implied. I know that's a little bit of poor writing, but I think Sarah kind of implied, do you trust him in this? And after all, Eobard took astronavigation when he was in grade school, so he obviously knew it was 38 degrees.
Well, and he has a self-interest, like Eobard had mentioned earlier, in not wanting to die. So, I mean, he's not going to steer him wrong, but no, it needs to be 36 degrees so they can all explode in a flaming ball of death.
I don't disagree that his 38 degrees should have been trusted, but the question that was asked of Ray was, do you trust him? And Ray said yes. And I didn't necessarily take the implied, although I can see that, Michelle, but I just think it's poor writing. Do you trust him in this? Should have been the question.
Let's be fair, though. The Eobard we've seen, he doesn't really lie to play his mind games. He's just pretty much in everyone's face. And it's like, I'm better than you because I'm the future. From the future, I know how this stuff works. So Eobard, aside from the fact that he pretended to be Harrison Wells for years, which we got a nice reference to in this one in case folks had forgotten, the Eobard we've seen in Legends is more just in your face and I'm better than you, I'm smarter than you, and he doesn't really tell lies. He doesn't tell the whole story at times, but...
which could mean a lack of trust.
Or just arrogance.
Yeah, I think that might be part of it.
I would never trust him, ever.
I don't think they had a choice on that ship. Either they trusted him or they had the potential to blow up because Stein couldn't get it worked out.
I would have trusted him with the 38 degrees, although I probably would have come up with the same calculations myself. I don't know what Stein's problem is.
And I would have trusted him and his intentions to escape the moon as well, because again, he either helped or he was dead also. If it impacts Eobard's self-interest, then you can pretty much trust him there because he wants to live. That's his entire motivation through Legends of Tomorrow right now, is he wants to stay alive.
Which he owns up to. I don't think anybody really realized that's where we were at until now. I'm trying to remember the conversations with the Legion of Doom. I don't think that has really come out just point blank like it did right there. All right, where do you guys want to go next?
The trio of British scientists.
And their British accents.
McRoy's no attempt to have a British accent.
I think he wins.
That was funny. Because really, let's just face it, the best moment is when Jackson is like, you need to create a distraction, and Stein decides to sing.
That was fun. As a matter of fact, it even played in the post-credits after the show is done. They had, at least in Netflix, and I seem to remember this live watching it, that there was a little cutout where they did the song again, and then Mick said, "Nice voice, Professor." It was all great. Chris, what did you think about the singing?
Well, singing was fantastic, and I rewatched it on Netflix because I bought the season pass when it was on sale. They also had the singing in the outro credits on Amazon Prime as well, or Amazon Video, because I guess it's not a Prime Video. But
so, was the singing gonna Gleek material?
Not quite.
So Stephen John Drew still has.
Well, now wait a minute. Roy did join in, so. I would say yes.
Okay. I don't know. I'd have to defer to Stephen Chandra. So when Stephen watches this, he's going to have to get back to us and he's going to have to tell us whether Stein singing was going to Gleek material or not.
He would be the expert that would know best.
I did like the fact that Jax was screwing around with the communications and nobody went down there to check.
It's just a glitch.
Yeah, the communications aren't working. Let's check all the relays. Nope, nobody did.
Because plot.
Exactly.
There's a lot of that that's definitely here. So we have the whole thing between Nate, his grandfather, Commander Steele, and Amaya going on. And there's more than just the relationship things going on. There's time issues going on as well, isn't there, Michelle?
Yes. I thought this was a very interesting way to talk about time travel on a personal level. Nate not only is really happy to see his grandfather again, Commander Steele is like, well, hey, this is a time ship. The spear's taken care of. I can go back home. And Nate is first like, yeah, I'm bored on this because, you know, his father wasn't that great of a dad because his grandfather, you know, he thinks his grandfather died. In 1965 and such. And then, you know, Amaya comes along and says, hey, if you go back, your son will be different. Since your son will be different, your grandson either A, might be different, or B, might not exist. Because that's a good point. Because, you know, if Hank has this great childhood, he might have gone to a different school. He might have made different friends and he might never have asked the girl out who became Nate's mom, because that does impact your life. So that was a good point.
It's the butterfly effect. One little thing can go and change everything. And one of the defining characteristics of that family is the fact that granddad/dad wasn't around. And if you change something like that, the results could be disastrous. We've all seen Back to the Future and Back to the Future 2 and 3. One little change and it's all jacked up.
They've even experimented with it on this show, too. So, and they should know better being on a time ship. That should be in the beginner's manual. Things not to do. Screw around with time as much as you can. So, yeah. Now, Commander Steele makes the ultimate sacrifice here at the end. And it's heartbreaking because he makes the sacrifice without being able to meet his son.
Yeah, again, Nate took a chance saying that to his dad, you know, there because Steele actually arranged for his son to be at Mission Control. He rigged an essay contest. And I'm sure he would have recognized, I know he didn't meet his dad, but I'm sure there would have been pictures. And he might have like recognized him like, hey, you look like my dad. Could you be my dad? And that would have messed him up. So, yeah, it's.
So you're saying it's probably for the best that they didn't meet?
Yeah, because here's the thing. I'm like in Nate's position where my dad would never win a Father of the Year award. And I know like that really does impact your life. So yeah, if my parents' relationship was very different, or if my father exited my life at a certain stage, my life would have taken a different direction. So, you know, it's very true that if he would have interacted with his son in any sort of way, it would have, you know, caused an aberration, and it could have either made Nate disappear or, who knows, created another Lily. All of a sudden, Nate has a sister, and, you know, who knows?
Yeah, those are all problematic.
If Nate had a sister, Ray could date the sister.
Why?
Why?
Well, why not? I mean, they're like best buddies anyway, right? So just introduce another part of the relationship. Yeah, I think it would work. It would be great.
It's generally not good for the women who Ray dates.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that, but she wouldn't know. Nor would she care if she really liked the dunderhead. All right, Chris, I'm at the end of my notes. What else do you got for this episode?
I don't really have a ton else, I don't think. What was I thinking? Mick Rory, his intro was the best this week. He continues to get the best intros when he gets to do them.
I wonder if they script them themselves or if it's scripted for them. I wonder if they're able to ad-lib.
I bet they ad-lib some. I bet they give them an outline of here's what you need to say, and then you guys just go to town, because there's always variations, different than the fact it's just the characters would speak differently.
I did have one thing to bring up. Gideon was awesome, as always, and now that we've met Amy Pemberton in person on the show, I can actually see her in the room talking to people as she's saying stuff. So it's always great to hear Gideon's voice. Michelle, I know you think that she's one of the highlights of the show.
Yes, that was funny when she's just like, oh dear. I love it when she says that.
What a great voice actor and actor.
My last thought was Amaya asked Gideon to show her future. I'm surprised Gideon didn't say there's some sort of protocol against that. She tells Amaya that's not advised, but wouldn't there have been like some sort of code in her that says you access denied or something? That was kind of odd.
For lack of a better term, a temporal prime directive or something like that, if you will, that is no, you can't go and help change the past either. Because how do you fix the fact that she knows all about her future now?
I think we're off the reservation because the Time Masters are no longer. And this crew has been acting not as an official crew, more as a ragtag pirate, basically. I mean, Legends was brought up in this episode again when Sarah called Rip a legend. Okay, if that's what they want to call themselves, Legends, but I think that there's no real rules anymore, and I don't know if she was ever programmed for that, because there might have been a need for that information at any point in time, so I don't know. It's 50-50 for me, because I see both sides of the coin. Temporal prime directive. That's a good one, Chris. You should make that up. You should write that up and write an article.
I stole it from Star Trek.
A temporal time direct?
Temporal prime directive.
Is that from, like, Enterprise?
Yes, it is.
Ah, with the Enterprise G.
I own up right now, Paramount. Don't sue me. I took something you said and twisted it around a little bit to using something else. Don't sue me. And did I mention don't sue me?
All right. So I think that's it for this week's episode. I'm looking forward to next week's episode. Michelle, what do we got in the hopper?
We have Fellowship of the Spear. It's going to be season 2, episode 14. It aired Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. The Legends land in France during World War I and enlist the aid of J.R.R. Tolkien to retrieve the last pieces of the Spear of Destiny from the Legion of Doom. Directed by Ben Bray, written by Kito Sumizu, and Matthew Mala.
Looking forward to that. Ben Bray has done some amazing episodes. So with that, we're going to go into the newsroom. Coming live to you from the Starling Tribune main news desk, we're going to talk a little bit about Arrow and season 6 with Diggle. Chris, what are we digging with Diggle?
So CBR had an interesting article, and I like to talk about Diggle because we've often said on this show that he's pretty much the heart and soul of Arrow at times. He's the glue that helps keep things together. He's Oliver's older brother slash mentor at times. He's a guide for Felicity. Well, season 6 is supposedly going to break him both physically and emotionally. When speaking with the press at Comic-Con, David Ramsey confirmed that Diggle does in fact make it off the island alive, but he will be a profoundly broken man when he returns to Star City. Asked about Diggle's greatest challenge going into Season 6, Ramsey replied, "We have to break Diggle. I think Season 6 will see Diggle get broken in a way he hasn't been broken before. It already starts in the first episode, and I think there's a certain amount of it that will continue throughout the season. I think it's an arc for Diggle that we haven't seen, even beyond his brother coming back to life and killing his evil brother, and that leading to the death of the Canary. Diggle's brokenness will in part come from the trauma of the island experience and will greatly affect the whole team." Now, Diggle is generally an open book, but there could be some bad things going on and he might try and hide some of it. So guys, be prepared for a version of Dig that we might not have seen before. Poor guy's going to have it rough and I feel bad for him.
Diggle's going to be broken again. Even though they said, like, we haven't seen him before, we've been down this road at least twice. I don't want to see it again.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't he technically broken this season when he went to prison and he said that I'm going to stay in prison because I deserve to be in prison? And then Oliver was like, no, you should redeem yourself in Spartan. And then he was like, okay, bro. And then they broke out and stuff.
So the only thing that I can think that would really break Diggle from the island, just off the top of my head, I haven't put a lot of thought into it, is Felicity's death. That would affect Diggle quite a bit, but I don't know if that would break him. I don't know.
I think Felicity dying is entirely possible. There's a conspiracy theory floating around the internet that is, if you look at social media, Emily Bett hasn't posted any photos or anything from the set of Arrow or anything on site in Vancouver, it seems like. So everyone's going, ooh, we can look at the social media and say she's dead, when really it could just be a play. But that would be an interesting way of looking at it. Something's going to happen bad there, be it that the team gets broken more, they have to live with something terrible that's happening. Maybe Diggle fails to save someone on the island. There, it's within his grasp to be able to save, say, Oliver's baby mama, whose name I'm forgetting all of a sudden, and he screws up, can't save her, and has to live with the fact that because of him, his best friend's son is without a mother now, or something like that. There's going to be something that happens that's going to lead to a lingering doubt in himself and everything that's happened. And David Ramsey plays the emotionally beat up, I don't know quite what to do character pretty well. And I'm really curious to see what he does with it now.
Yes, we'll see, even though I don't want to see it. I think that's now the mantra for her.
So I like the character, so I don't want to see it, but I like the actor. So I'm really curious to see what he can do with it as well.
Mm. Yeah, this is basically his breakout role, isn't it? Where he's come to the spotlight with Arrow.
I'm trying to think what else I've seen David Ramsey in. He was in a couple episodes of The West Wing. I actually ran into him by accident one time I was watching. I was like, is that Diggle? And I rewound back. I'm like, huh, he's so skinny.
I ran into old, like a BBC production that had him in it. Oh, he's been a bit actor in quite a bit. So, well, moving on into another casting decision for Arrow, we now know that the FBI is coming to arrest Oliver.
Yeah, the CW's Arrow has cast Sydell Noel in a recurring role for its sixth season. Variety learned Noel will play Samantha Watson, an FBI agent who will be investigating Oliver Queen's connection to the Green Arrow. Noel was most recently seen on Glow on Netflix, and she has a role in Marvel's upcoming Black Panther movie. Awesome.
Should be early 2018, so she'll be on TV as her movie is airing. That'll be great. So, Chris, in a strange twist of fortune, Mark Guggenheim, outdoing last year, has now announced that before season 6 has started, season 7 has been picked up for Arrow.
Well, he said they had plans. While previewing season 6 at the Television Critics Association, producer Mark Guggenheim, who also co-created and produces Arrow, said the Arrow writers already have ideas for season 7. According to Guggenheim, we've already started talking and about, ooh, we have a shape for season 7 already. This is the earliest we've ever had an idea for a season that far ahead, but it comes out of our conversations about season 6. So they have ideas for what's going to be coming up. He said beyond season 7, it would be a time to start thinking about giving Arrow a proper series finale. However, when that inevitable time comes, Guggenheim would not require long-term planning to deliver the ending that he and co-creators Greg Berlanti and Andrew Kreisberg have planned. According to him, quote, I think we've always had an endpoint in mind. We've always known how we want to end the show. That endpoint doesn't require X number of seasons. If we had to, we could work towards it as long as we knew it with enough leeway. We could work towards the moment we've been talking about since day one. So they have an exit strategy. They just need to have the right time to set it up. And they have ideas for season 7. Now the real question is, will they get season 7? And I think we've got something on this when we get to feedback. So we can kind of bypass our personal opinions until we get to the feedback. But it's an awful interesting stance to already be talking about season 7 after your ratings have gotten dinged up a bit.
I won't say anything personal about this, but I will bring up the fact that this is an interesting gauntlet to throw to the network by them, saying that we've already got a season 7 and there's an endpoint in mind, but oh, by the way, we need leeway in order to get to that endpoint. Meaning if we don't get a decision early enough in whatever season 6, 7, 8, 9, we're going to have to extend to the next year in order to get to that endpoint. So that's just an interesting gauntlet that I noticed there. All right, talking about gauntlets, well, not really gauntlets, but crossovers. We've got dates for the crossovers in the fall, don't we, Michelle?
Yes, CW announced that the first night of this season's superhero crossover would be Monday, November 27th, when Supergirl would be paired with Arrow. That day reps a one-time move to Monday for the special occasion. The crossover concludes November 28th with The Flash and DC's Legends of Tomorrow. Commencing on the crossovers going from 4 nights last season to 2 this fall, CW president Mark Pedowitz said, last year's crossover was the most successful week in CW history in terms of ratings and everything. We felt in this particular case, we had Flash and Legends paired, so it was better to make it two-hour movies, a miniseries. We thought this was the best way to go. We had a lot of conversations with producers and marketing people.
Very interesting. This will be Thanksgiving week here in the United States. Probably not Thanksgiving up in Canardia, but that's generally Monday and Tuesdays are the dates to get shows in, because after that, there are no shows, new shows that air until at least Sunday night, if not Monday. So this is an interesting tactic to take in terms of the timing of it, as well as the airing two-hour movies. So I hope it'll be good. Chris, what do you think?
I think it will be good. I just don't know. We had this nice alien invasion arc in the past and things like that. So I don't know that we have anything quite as exciting this time around as the invasion arc.
Yeah, we'll see what they lead up to. It'll be around episode 7-ish for all the series, so we'll see. So something else that we'd be looking forward to, I know a lot of people like a particular villain in The Flash, but it looks like we're going to get the villain in another series right now, right, Michelle?
Phil Klemmer talked to IGN about the Legends of Tomorrow and their villains, and he said, at the head of whatever you want to call our evil organization, it's different. Last year, it was three characters from the three different shows that formed this alliance. This is a non-human entity. This is a much more supernatural, spooky vibe this season. We're dealing more with magic. It's less real-world bad guys. Klemmer was keen to leave that character a secret, but he did promise you will hear the character's name in the season 3 premiere. Unlike previous seasons, which are more science or time travel focused, season 3 of Legends will, quote, be more in the world of the occult and monsters. Following behind this leader as his acolytes are familiar characters like Damian Dark, who will have been brought back to life after his death on Arrow, as well as Gorilla Grodd, who's normally a Flash villain. This will be a post-Gorilla City Grodd, Clemmer confirms they're still actively campaigning for Matt Ryan's Constantine to appear on Legends of Tomorrow. And this is why I put this article in there and why I wanted to talk about it, because it's a cult, it's magic. And there's an article I wrote that's on the Gunna Geek site. When I went to Indie Pop Con, I went to his panel, and Matt Ryan enjoys playing Constantine. He enjoyed coming back to Arrow. He's enjoyed doing the voice, not only for Justice League Dark, but the upcoming CW Seed series. He really likes it. And if they can make this work, and if they do it right, he will, and they can do the schedule, he will say yes.
Make it happen, producers. Make it happen right now.
Something else that the producers are making happening is Mr. Incredible is coming for The Flash.
Something like that. Comicbook.com broke the fact that the CW has cast Hartley Sawyer in the role of Ralph Dibny, who will play a recurring role in the upcoming fourth season of The Flash. For those of you that might not be familiar, one of The Flash's most iconic allies is Ralph Dibny, the Elongated Man, a fast-talking private investigator with investigative skills that rival those of Batman. Upon discovering he has the power to stretch his body in any shape or form, he uses his new abilities to help Team Flash solve one of Central City's greatest mysteries. So another meta, but a smart meta, a detective-like meta, which gives me hope that one day maybe we'll get the question in the Flareoverse.
Question in the Flare, yeah, why not? I was thinking that we got the Trickster. That's been it so far, right?
Yep.
Okay. So, Michelle, one last casting news or expanding of role news. We do have another special news story, right?
Yes. Mistress's alum Jess McCollin has signed on for a recurring role in the third season of the CW superhero drama, Legends of Tomorrow. McCollin will play Special Agent Ava Sharp, a hardworking agent for a secret branch of the federal government called the Time Bureau, who's dedicated to the regulation of time travel and the protection of history.
That sounds like something that came out of last year's crossover. Looking forward to seeing Jess on set. I think that's it for the news, but we've got some feedback to run through, don't we, Michelle?
Yes. I tweeted out a link to the article that Chris talked about with the producers of Arrow saying, hey, we got plans for season 7, even though we have not been renewed. And I posted a question that says, how premature do we think this is? Love the show, but we have to be honest about the ratings. And Cody, at Cody from Ohio, said Supernatural is still on air. I don't know what its ratings are compared to, but CW isn't afraid to keep things going. And I admitted that's true, but Supernatural's numbers have been consistent, but it is cheaper. There's a smaller cast for Supernatural, and it has a really rabid following and such.
That's putting it, that's not a strong enough term, rabid following for Supernatural fans. I don't know what the right terminology for that is, but if you go and browse the internet or you talk to someone who's a Supernatural fan, it's a ridiculous amount of excitement they have for that. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, but it's a show that's going into its 13th season, and many of them are still just as excited as when they first discovered that show, which is incredibly impressive to me because we do a podcast about Arrow. I point blank said, I think it was in season 3, that if we weren't doing a podcast about Arrow, I probably would have quit watching Arrow at that point in time. And I'm glad I hung around because season 5 came around, but there's been lulls in Supernatural, but they've still predominantly all stuck around, and there's a rabid excitement about it that just astounds me.
Apparently there was a pop-up Kansas concert, I guess that's their band, I don't watch Supernatural, at SDCC that Haley over on the Crimson Comet got to enjoy.
Carry On My Wayward Son by Kansas is like the unofficial theme song, because Kripke, the creator, he used that song a lot, and it's for them to get there. And then, Chris, you put a note in about Supernatural's ratings.
Yeah, I was going to bring those up. So let's do some comparison here. We just talked about in the ratings portion of this show what Arrow's were, and it was, what, like a 1.5 or whatever for the episode that it aired that week. So let's compare things a little bit. I've got the last two seasons worth of ratings for Supernatural, so season 11 and season 12. And season 11 was pulling a 1.78 on average with a 0.7 in the key 18 to 49 demographic. And then in season 12, it went down a little bit, but still pulling a 1.675 with a 0.6 in the 18 to 49 demographic. That's live plus like the first day's DVR ratings. But still, not terrible ratings for a CW show, especially in its 13th season. And like Michelle had said, the cast is smaller, so you don't have as much cost. That's why you keep having Supernatural come back. You don't have the giant cast where you've got how many people are on Arrow now that are pretty much always being shown? 10-ish? Where you've got like four in Supernatural?
I think they're going to transition into more guest roles or more limited run roles in the future just to keep the cost down on Arrow, because the ratings don't justify a season regular for a lot of the cast. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that as the show progresses. And like half the cast was brand new this year.
Yep. Which makes them cheap.
I can see that. But Oliver is going to cost more. And in that vein, I could see them killing off a character such as Felicity as things go forward here.
Oh, she did.
So what other kind of feedback do we have, Michelle?
Well, I heard from this guy named Stephen John Drew. I don't know if he's familiar with anyone.
Sounds like a hoser.
He said that I think I'm at the point of being okay with loose ends for a low-rated show if canceled versus what happened last season with S.H.I.E.L.D. And then I replied, if no Arrow season 6, I would be frustrated if show got canned. They better not end season 6 the same way they end season 5. So if they didn't renew it for season 6, I would be very frustrated because they ended up with like the island blew up and we don't know really what happened. And Steven replied, I guess the question is, for low-rated shows, is it better to treat every as the last or take a leap of faith and focus on storytelling? And then I replied, low-rated or not, shows should wrap up main threads. And I said, Gotham is a good example. Main points are dealt with, yet you can see there's more story. And then Steven said, I guess I'm just a sucker for a cliffhanger. So what do you guys think? I mean, which approach do you prefer?
You need to wrap things up if you think you're going away. Some of the worst cliffhangers out there are things that have never been fulfilled. Look at Space Above and Beyond, where season one ends on a cliffhanger. Look at Stargate Universe, which, while it had its issues, ends on a cliffhanger with one of the most beloved characters of that series. Was he or isn't he going to die? We don't know. You need to have the respect for the fan base as well to finish a story.
Yeah, Alpha Season 2 is another big one that I always tend to bring up along those discussions. You can have a cliffhanger, but wrap up the current story arc and just like mention something else. Like this past year, what was that? Designated Survivor show. So that's a good example, but bad example of how to run a first season of a show since they ran through five showrunners. But they got to the end, they wrapped up all the arcs, but then they were like, okay, we've got this new thing that is on the horizon. And I would have been fine at the end of Designated Survivor for that to be it. It did end up getting renewed for season two. We're going to see more of that show, but that's just an example of how you can do it right. So they need to do something like that with Arrow. And with Arrow, if the rest of the Flareverse is running, then, like with Matt Constantine, you can have Oliver Queen or whoever inject themselves into the other shows here and there. So that's a possibility as well.
And I'm less concerned when it comes to Arrow because we just had the news story in here, which is if we have time, we know how we want to end the show. It's just a matter of they need to be told in advance, like, okay, look, this is your end date. This is when everything has to be done so that you can get that proper ending. I don't want to be like Angel was either, where they decided last minute, oh, we're not going to do this. And Joss Whedon just didn't change the ending. So Angel ends on a giant cliffhanger that was thankfully resolved in the comics. But still, fans don't like it when these people they've invested years into watching are then going, well, that's it? I don't know what's going to happen. No, that's not what we want. We want resolution.
Lucifer did a great job of this. Had this overarching story like with his mom and his mom, actual Lucifer, you know, God's wife came and it was all this stuff. And then they actually dealt with it in the season finale. But then they had like this little stinger at the end where Lucifer wakes up naked in the desert. And you're like, well, like what happened? And it's like, you know, even if it got canceled, it's like, okay, that main story would have been resolved. It's just like this little what could have been. Well, it's like, it's okay. But the main point was done. So I would have been okay.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens at the end of season 6 and whether or not we actually get a season 7 of Arrow or not. Now, For more great geeky content, Chris, do you know where I can go?
Well, I've been told you can go to this place called the Gunna Geek Network because they have a variety of different awesome geeky and nerdy podcasts there. And I'm told that each week when we talk about it in here, we try to make you guys go and check that out, but also remind you there are some really cool specific shows, some unique shows, and we try to pick one so that you go and check that one out. And this week we want to talk to you about mini episode number 4 of the Super Geeky Playdate. This is entitled Kevin Eastman. Kevin Eastman joins the Super Geeky Playdate to talk about his life, his upcoming comic Drawing Blood, and his experience creating the Ninja Turtles. Yes, that Kevin Eastman, who is pretty much an icon for developing the original Ninja Turtles. He's writing a new book. It's coming out on Kickstarter, kind of his life story, and it kind of involves the origin of how they came up with the Turtles. I've heard good things, and the guys over at Super Geeky Playdate have the interview with him. So go check that out over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, and also go check out some of the other awesome geeky and nerdy podcasts that are there as well. But folks, I think that is going to start wrapping us up for this week. A big thank you to everyone who watched live or listened live over at Geeks.live, or anyone who downloads and replays the episodes. I want to remind you folks, rather, that you can download the podcast, listen on Spreaker, replay on YouTube. Just consume it. We're out there everywhere.
And if you happen to miss us or you're here tonight and you want to come back, don't forget every Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Sundays at Geeks.live, we will be recording our latest episode. And if you've checked us out and you want to tell us we're doing a great job, go ahead and give us a 5-star review on your podcatcher of choice, iTunes or Apple Podcasts, as it's known now, is one of them. And that 5 stars, just it makes us feel good.
You can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, where you can check out our forums and other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Great episode, guys. That wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag Dunderhead.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Matt Damon.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag Mission Control Sing Along. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.